Barbara County, order number R32004-0129. And before I go any further, I've got a little opening statement. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board and the United States Environmental Protection Agency for consideration of a national pollutant discharge elimination system permit renewal for the Goleta Sanitation District, Santa Barbara County. The order of the presentation at this hearing will be as follows. 1. Witnesses called by the U.S. EPA. 2. Presentation by Board Counsel regarding the settlement agreement. 3. Witnesses called by the Board staff. 4. Witnesses called by the discharger. 5. Examination by the Board of Discharger's witnesses and cross-examination by discharger's of Regional Board and EPA witnesses. 6. Comments by representatives of agencies. 7. Comments by the public. 8. Summation or closing statements by the discharger and the Regional Board and EPA staff. Board members, the EPA hearing officer, and the staff counsel may ask questions to clarify testimony of a witness at any time. Others may ask questions at the conclusion of a witness's testimony. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and address unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. Even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give to the board and to EPA in this matter today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalty of law?
I do.
Thank you very much. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you. This is a joint hearing by the Regional Board with representatives from the federal EPA. The Clean Water Act requires that publicly owned treatment works that are discharging to the ocean comply with secondary treatment standards defined in the Code of Federal Regulations. There is an opportunity for the discharger, for a discharger, to apply for a waiver from those standards. The waiver proceeds under Section 301H of the Federal Clean Water Act. The U.S. EPA has exclusive jurisdiction to issue NPDES permits that include 301H waivers. The state's interest in this matter, of course, is that the waters of the state may be affected by those discharges. The state also has authority under the Port of Colon Water Quality Control Act to issue waste discharge requirements for ocean dischargers. And that's the reason why we're having a joint hearing with the U.S. EPA today. Also, if the regional board adopts the waste discharge requirements today, that action will constitute concurrence with a proposed EPA waiver of certain secondary treatment requirements under Section 301H of the Clean Water Act and water quality certification under Section 401 of the Clean Water Act. Concurrence and certification are required before the EPA can issue an NPDES permit and a 301H waiver. When Chair Jeffries described the order of our procedure, he said the representatives of the staff from the U.S. EPA and the Regional Board will be given the opportunity to begin the testimony. We will not have U.S. EPA testimony today other than an opening statement by Ms. Hashimoto, is my understanding. And our staff anticipates taking a little less than 15 minutes for their presentation, absent questions. We understand the Goleta Sanitary District will testify next for up to about 20 minutes. Following Goleta's presentation will be the opportunity for public comments. Our chair will call the names based on the testimony cards, and I know some of you came in after our opening comments. So again, the testimony cards are available with Harvey Packard back there in the back of the room. So if you could fill those out and hand them to staff, and staff will get them up here, then we'll be able to conduct the meeting. As everyone has had an opportunity to submit written comments on this matter, the chair will limit the public comments to 3 minutes for each person. We'll then have EPA and board questions, followed by regional board deliberation. And I think before we get to regional board deliberation, we'll be taking a break at that point. The regional board may take action today or defer action. And so at this point, I'd like to give our hearing officer from the United States Environmental Protection Agency the opportunity to make some procedural comments. Janet Hashimoto is the chief of the Monitoring and Assessment Office in the Water Division of the U.S. EPA in San Francisco, and glad you could join us today.
Thank you, Roger. Good morning. I am Janet Hashimoto, and as Roger mentioned, I am the chief of the Monitoring and Assessment Office in the U.S. EPA Region 9 office in San Francisco. And my staff person, Terry Fleming, worked very, very closely with the regional board staff on the Goleta permit. He's unavailable to be here today because he's homesick with the flu. This public hearing regarding reissuance of the Goleta Sanitary District's Federal National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, or MPDES permit, and State Waste Discharge Requirements and Monitoring Reporting Program is now open. This hearing is being held jointly by the U.S. EPA and the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board to receive comments on these jointly proposed actions. I've been authorized by our regional administrator, Wayne Nastri, to serve as the presiding officer for EPA for today's public hearing. The hearing is being held pursuant to state law and pursuant to Part 25, Title 40 of the Code of Federal Regulations. The purpose of this hearing is to accept public comments on the draft federal MPDES permit and the state's waste discharge requirements and monitoring reporting program for the Goleta Sanitary District wastewater treatment facilities, discharge of blended secondary and advanced primary treated municipal wastewater, which has also undergone chlorination and dechlorination to the Pacific Ocean. Approximately 4 million gallons per day, or MGD, of treated wastewater is discharged about 1 mile offshore. As the discharge is not yet fully secondary and the Goleta Sanitary District has requested a waiver from the National Secondary Treatment Requirements under Section 301H of the Clean Water Act, we at EPA have primary regulatory responsibility for the continuation of this discharge. Public notice of this jointly drafted MPDES permit was made in the Santa Barbara Tribune on October 4, 2004. This notice provided that written public comments were due on November 4th and later changed to November 5th, 2004, and that oral comments on the joint draft MPDES permit would be accepted through the close of this public hearing. So if you plan to make a comment at today's hearing, if you have not already done so, please pass a card up to Harvey Packard of the Regional Board staff. All of these cards will be provided to Chairman Jeffries, who will call your name and then if you can present your comments. Interested persons also have the opportunity to submit written comments for the administrative record. Written comments were due by November 5, 2004. Therefore, if you have already provided written comments, it is not necessary for you to repeat those comments here today. Both written and oral comments receive equal consideration from the EPA and the Regional Board. After the close of this public hearing, EPA and the Regional Board will review and respond to all written and oral comments received. We at EPA will not be making a decision on the proposed draft permit until all comments submitted during the comment period have been considered. The Regional Board has considered all timely written comments and will consider all comments, oral comments before reaching a decision, possibly today. The purpose of this public hearing is to hear your comments, so EPA will not be engaging in a dialogue on the merits of the issues themselves today, and I, of course, as the hearing officer, will not be committing EPA to any specific decision on the draft MPDES permit. Rather, it's EPA's purpose to use this time to hear and consider your comments. If the Regional Board adopts the waste discharge requirements today, that action will constitute concurrence with the proposed EPA waiver of certain secondary treatment requirements under Section 301H of the Clean Water Act, and it also is the water quality certification under Section 401 of the Clean Water Act. Each person from whom we receive written comments will be given notice of the EPA and Regional Board decision on the final permit for the Goleta Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Facility. If you haven't submitted comments but you'd like to receive notice of our decision, please add your name to the attendance list for today's meeting. The final permit will become effective 33 days following issuance by EPA. Pursuant to 40 CFR Part 124, a petition may be filed with the Environmental Appeals Board to review any condition of the federal permit decision. If a request for review is filed, only those conditions which are uncontested will go into effect pending disposition of the request for review. Request for review of the federal permit must meet the requirements of 40 CFR 124.19. Persons filing a request for review must have filed comment on the draft permit or participated in this public hearing. Otherwise, requests for review may be filed only to the extent of changes from the draft to the final federal permit decision. A video and recording of today's hearing will be available for reviewing at either EPA's office or in San Francisco or this regional board office. And anyone who wishes to make a copy of the video or recording, please make arrangements with the regional board or EPA. This pretty much concludes what I wish to say as hearing officer for EPA, and we appreciate the level of interest that people have shown on the Goleta Sanitary Wastewater Treatment Facility and look forward to your comments. Thank you.
Mr. Briggs.
Thank you.
I have a question before we start.
Go ahead.
Mr. Daniels.
I wonder if we could have a list of all the written things that we have received that we're supposed to have so that we make sure we actually have seen them.
That's what I was just going to go over. So, speaking of, but before I did that, I did want to mention, Ms. Hashimoto, you referred to the publication in the Santa Barbara Tribune. I think it was the News Press. Okay. Just a clarification, minor point. And you mentioned written comments, and that's what I wanted to cover next, as Board Member Daniels requested. So, first of all, we have these are supplemental materials in addition to the agenda materials that were sent out originally. First of all, we have a supplemental sheet that says prepared on November 10th. That was mailed out on November 12th, a week ago. Which is many pages. We have a second supplemental sheet that says prepared on the subheading prepared on November 16th. And I believe that was emailed out on the same day, November 16th. We have a supplemental sheet that, and that one is several pages. It's 20 pages plus a couple of attachment pages. And then we have a third supplemental sheet, which is a one-pager, which says prepared on November 17th. It was emailed out, I believe, again on the same day, November 17th, and it has very minor corrections, typo-type things. And then we have a package. The first page is from Mullen and Hensel on behalf of the district. And that was overnight mailed on 11/17. It contains some copies of PowerPoint slides, information on population projections, a copy of an article from the Santa Barbara News Press. Did you have anything to say about that submittal, Lori?
Yes, the November 5th letter also requested that the regional board include in our administrative record a previous petition that the district filed to the state board regarding an action that the regional board took on this facility in 2002, and also an April 16th, 2003 letter from the district to Dan Frank, who was the state board attorney working on that petition. The state board administrative hearing regs do provide for incorporation by reference of materials in the regional board files. That can be done in the discretion of the board to the extent that the materials are relevant. I have discussed this with the chair, and he has decided not to include either of these two items in our administrative record. The petition to the state board is not properly before this board, and this matter is currently in litigation. It's the position of both the state board and the regional board that the state board is not a proper defendant in that litigation and that its administrative record should not be part of that litigation. And so for the same reason, we're not including the petition in our record. Regarding the letter to Dan Frank, of April 16th, 2003. A lot of the materials in that letter relate to procedural and legal issues that were specific to the 2002 hearing. Those issues are now moot, so any discussion of those issues is not relevant to this proceeding. A lot of those materials also respond to materials submitted to the State Board by Heal the Ocean in the State Board petition, which again aren't part of our record, and therefore any response to those materials aren't relevant. So for those reasons, we're not including those two items into the record. However, exhibits F and G to the April 16th, 2003 letter were separately submitted by the district attached to their November 5th, 2004 letter. Those items don't refer to the petition action, and they are relevant, and those are included in the record.
Thank you. And additionally, Mr. Chairman, we have a letter that was, first of all, there are two letters which I believe are in your folders, and for the board members on the phone, I'm not sure that you received a copy of these, but there's a letter from Coast Law Group dated November 11th to Mr. Battles and Ms. Oaken. And then there's a letter dated November 16th, Goleta Sanitary District letterhead to Marco Gonzalez of the Coast Law Group from John Carter of the Goleta Sanitary District. And then lastly, this morning we received a letter, I guess we received by email last night, but at any rate, we have a copy here this morning from Rebecca Bjork of, it's actually signed by Martin Damwick, president of SAMA, addressed to Jeffrey Young, chair of the regional board. The subject is regulatory framework for collection system operation and management. I think that's it as far as.
And SAMA stands for what?
SAMA
just
stands,
for the record.
Stands for Sanitation Agency Managers Association of Santa Barbara County.
And are those last three letters going to be part of our record, the ones we don't have?
I believe the SAMA letter was emailed.
Yeah, I think I emailed that this morning to Dr. Press and Mr. Daniels. Did you receive those?
Not yet.
Ms. Bjork is also here. I'm not sure if you're planning to read that into the record. Okay, that will be read later.
That's all three of those letters, or just?
Actually, the other two letters are pretty short, so maybe the easiest thing to do would be to just read those as well.
Okay.
Are the other two really relative? I mean, they're talking about this issue of notice.
I can talk about these briefly when I go over the settlement agreement. And
okay.
Mr. Gonzalez is here, so if he wants to address these letters any further, he can do that as well.
Okay. Am I missing anything? Okay. Thank you. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, the first one's witnesses called by USEPA.
It's me.
Oh, you're up next.
I need my PowerPoint.
I'm just going to verify that Janet didn't have any last-minute witnesses. A surprise witness.
No surprises.
Now, do they have a copy of PowerPoint? Do the two?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
For the guys on the phone, we're having some technical difficulties. That's why you're not hearing anything.
Thank you.
thank Roger for sending along the PowerPoint. That's really helpful to just follow along.
Good morning. I'm Lori Okun. I'm staff counsel for the Regional Board, and I'm going to briefly talk about the settlement agreement that's part of the agenda materials today. Before I do that, I would like to caution the board that this matter still has pending litigation, and we will be adjourning briefly to closed session so that I can answer any questions the board may have about the litigation. So if you have questions on the litigation or how the settlement agreement impacts the litigation, then I would advise you to save those for closed session. Next slide. By way of background, as you heard, Section 301H allows the EPA to issue an NPDES permit with the secondary treatment requirements modified. The Regional Board considered a modified NPDES permit for this facility in 2002, and after a hearing, denied concurrence in the 301H waiver and denied 401 water quality certification. The district filed a petition to the state board challenging the regional board's action, and after the state board's petition was dismissed by operation of law, the district filed suit against the regional board and the state board. Shortly after the suit was filed, regional board staff and the district commenced settlement negotiations, and subsequently the regional board delegated settlement authority to the executive officer, subject to the board's ability to consider and decide on any waste discharge requirements or 301H concurrence and 401 certification that were necessary in order to effect the permit. And that's what's before you today. There was some confusion, I think, when we made the settlement agreement public about whether the settlement agreement was final or not. The settlement agreement has been entered, but there are conditions subsequent, including today's permit, that are necessary in order for the settlement agreement to continue in force. The settlement agreement only covers the issues related to the 301H waiver and the agreed-upon schedule for the district to convert its facility to full secondary treatment. The conversion period is 10 years, and the BOD and suspended solids limits are those that are set forth in the district's existing permit. Obviously, the NPDES permit and waste discharge requirement include other provisions, and the district is challenging some of those provisions, and we'll be discussing those today. Any challenges to provisions not related to the 301H waiver in the NPDES permit won't impact the settlement agreement. Next slide, please. The district's obligations under the settlement agreement, assuming all the conditions subsequent occur, is that the district has agreed to upgrade its facility to full secondary treatment over 10 years. There's a force majeure provision that could impact that schedule, and I'll discuss that in a minute. The agreement provides for some enhanced treatment, and if the board or the public have any questions about those enhanced treatment requirements, then those should be addressed to staff. The final thing is that the district will agree to dismiss the pending litigation basically after the permit becomes effective and any petitions to the state board related to the 301H waiver petition or the 301H waiver provisions have been resolved. In the meantime, the litigation will be stayed until either it's dismissed because the permit becomes effective or the agreement becomes null and void. Next slide. The conditions to the district's obligations are first that the regional board issue what the agreement refers to as the first five-year permit. That is an NPDES permit issued by EPA that the regional board will concur with that includes the 10-year conversion schedule, suspended solids, and BOD provisions. The regional board can issue that permit today, or if the regional board, after considering the evidence, declines to issue the permit and the state board later issues an order, either issuing the permit itself or concurring with the EPA permit itself or requiring the regional board to do so. That would be treated as the first five-year permit. The today's permit needs to include certain findings, and those findings are just to set forth that subject to the regional board's discretion in considering the second permit, the settlement agreement contemplates that there will be a 10-year upgrade period and that based on the evidence in the record to date, the 10-year upgrade schedule is appropriate. Next slide. The next condition to the district's obligations following the first five-year permit is that a second five-year permit will be issued to allow the district to complete the 10-year upgrade process. If the regional board can make findings that the facility complies with the requirements of 301H, then the second five-year permit will be issued as a 301H waiver permit. If the board decides that it can't concur in a 301H finding, but that the 10-year schedule is still appropriate, the board could instead issue an NPDS permit with a concurrent cease and desist order or time schedule order so that the district could complete the 10-year schedule without being subject to mandatory minimum penalties. There's a provision in the agreement that if it's permissible by law, the NPDS permit would have a compliance schedule in it to complete the 10 years, as opposed to putting that in a time schedule order or cease and desist order. But under the current state of the law, that wouldn't be permissible. It would require either a judicial interpretation or a change in the law. And again, either the regional board or the state board can issue the permit to satisfy that condition. Next slide. Because the regional board can't issue a permit 5 years in advance and will have to reconsider the 301H waiver in 5 years, the settlement agreement states that the executive officer will recommend to the regional board today and in 5 years that a permit be adopted as contemplated in the settlement agreement. The executive officer does not need to make that recommendation in the second permit if the agreement has become null and void by then, or if new evidence becomes available as defined in the agreement. And new evidence basically is information that's not currently in the record that a 301H waiver isn't available. The district has capacity needs in excess of current projections, or there's a change in the law that would prohibit that action. Next slide. The settlement agreement doesn't limit the regional board's discretion in any way, so the regional board will be considering all the evidence that is currently in the written record and the testimony today and making a decision, and will decide whether a 301H waiver is appropriate at this time and whether the 10-year conversion schedule is an appropriate schedule. Again, in 2009, there'll be a new administrative record and 5 more years of monitoring data, and so the regional board will again have to consider the record and make a decision at that time. Assuming that there's no new evidence and no changes, or even if there are, if the regional board decides in 5 years that the 10-year schedule is no longer appropriate, the regional board would have to make findings based on evidence on why it changed its position, either because there was new evidence or new analysis was done. The regional board is bound by general provisions of administrative law to make findings and support its decisions, and so that would apply to that as well. Next slide. The agreement includes a force majeure provision which applies to the milestones in the 10-year schedule. The force majeure events are basically events that are beyond the district's reasonable control, such as acts of nature, labor strikes, and permitting delays that are beyond the district's control that aren't caused by the district. There would also be a force majeure event if the regional board denies the 301H waiver concurrence today, or if the regional board grants the 301H waiver concurrence today, and there's a third-party petition which is still pending before the state board in approximately a year, or a similar occurrence happens with respect to the second five-year permit. If a petition was still pending about a year after that permit were issued, force majeure would kick in at that point. Next slide. The milestones for the completion of the project are not conditions of the permit. They're cited in permit findings, but they're enforceable through the settlement agreement, and there's two primary ways that those milestones can be enforced. The agreement provides for stipulated penalties, and these penalties are designed only to provide a financial incentive to the district to complete the project as scheduled. The stipulated penalties are $200 a day for all the milestones up until the due date for the completion of the upgrade. If the district does incur penalties during the first permit term, but at the time of the issuance of the second permit has caught up with the schedule, then all accrued penalties will be forgiven at that point. Or similarly, if the regional board decides not to grant the second permit, then penalties will be forgiven. During the second permit, if there are any penalties that are accrued prior to the due date for issuing a notice to proceed with construction, but the district is caught up by that date, then any penalties will be forgiven. Penalty amounts for not completing the construction and achieving full secondary treatment by November 1st, 2014 would be $500 a day for the first 6 months, $1,000 a day for the next 6 months, and $2,000 a day after 1 year. But we're hopeful that none of these penalty provisions will ever kick in. Next slide. The two means for enforcing the milestones are that the regional board can issue an administrative civil liability order. If there is a milestone that's missed and the regional board disagrees that force majeure excuses any delay by the district, obviously the district and the regional board could agree that a missed date was subject to penalties and no ACL would be necessary. If the regional board were to issue an ACL, they could wait until the catch-up date and hold the hearing, or rather than having to wait and go back and consider events that may have happened several years ago, the regional board can issue the ACL order at the time, but the district and the regional board have agreed to request the state board to hold any petition that the district may file in advance so that if the district challenges the ACL order, we don't have to waste time going through a petition process when the penalties may end up being forgiven later anyway. After a state board resolution, the district could file a challenge in court if it doesn't agree with the state board decision, but again, that would be delayed until after the catch-up date, and hopefully that won't be necessary. In addition, the regional board can enforce the terms of the settlement agreement by going into court and seeking a judicial ruling, an injunction, to require the district to perform any tasks that have slipped. The milestones aren't permit terms, so that would be done as a court action as opposed to other types of administrative actions that we sometimes take to enforce permits. And finally, there is a provision in the agreement that says that it can be amended only after a public meeting so that there's a public participation process and the public can follow as this agreement, if it becomes effective as it plays out, and participate in the process. There is a provision that allows the regional board to delegate to the executive officer the ability to amend the agreement without going through the regional board, but that delegation can only happen after a public meeting with public input. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holcomb. Mr. Briggs.
Yes, for our board staff testimony, Todd Stanley of our staff will be making the staff presentation.
Before we move on to that, I have a question for Ms. Oaken.
Go ahead.
What kind of permit do we have to approve today for this all to take effect? Like, we can clearly have disagreements about certain parts of the thing, but what does the permit have to have in order to trigger this agreement to continue?
It has to have the BOD and suspended solids limits that are in the draft permit, and it has to have the findings regarding the 10-year schedule and the conversion schedule milestones, which are findings of the draft permit. If the regional board decides after hearing the testimony to make other changes in the permit, then you could do that. The permit would become effective. If there were challenges to the other permit terms, those terms would not become effective until the challenge was resolved, if there was a stay. But in order for the settlement to take effect, it's just the 301H waiver and conversion schedule provisions in the permit that have to be adopted.
Great. Thank you. That helps.
That was Mr. Daniels for the record. And when I asked our fellow board members that are not here today, would you identify your name for the record? Appreciate it very much.
Mr. Stanley.
Good morning, board. Members of the public, thanks for coming. My name is Todd Stanley, Regional Board staff. Agenda number six, item number six of today's agenda, proposes the reissuance of the MPDS permit for the Goleta Sanitary District. Next slide, please. The district discharges a blend of advanced primary and secondary treated effluent to the ocean. The design average dry weather flow rate of the plant is 9 million gallons per day, or MGD. The secondary treatment capacity of the plant is 4.4 MGD. In December of 2003, the district applied for permit renewal at a flow rate of 7.64 million gallons per day. And in 2003, their average monthly influent flow was 5.1 MGD. The district also has the capacity to treat up to 3.3 million gallons per day to tertiary treatment standards. The actual current production is in the range of 0.75 to 1 MGD, and they distribute that reclaimed water through the Goleta Water District under Order 9103. This map depicts the location of the district. Down here is the treatment plant. It shows the relative approximate location of the outfall. You see it's adjacent to the airport and UCSB. Next slide, please. The district's publicly owned treatment works currently serves approximately 74,000 people. The district has conducted a population projection out through 2007, which shows an estimated population of 76,400. This table shows a couple of different bases for flow estimates for the population going into the future. The middle column there, flow estimates using population projection, used that study to out through 2007 to indicate the estimated flow at that time. The right-hand column uses their historical flow increases, which have been about 1% a year as they were observed from 1995 through 2001. Those numbers are a little more conservative, a little higher. And you can see that 2009, their estimates are 6.65 MGD, well below the 7.64 they've applied for. This slide shows the primary differences between the proposed order and order number 9621, their current permit. Section B includes ocean plan effluent limits for the entirety of Table B. Section D includes a wastewater collection system management plan set of requirements. Biosolids requirements were added at Section F, and the order and the monitoring and reporting program were updated throughout according to the 2001 Ocean Plan. Also, as we've mentioned earlier, separate waste discharge requirements are pending for the tributary collection systems that discharge to the treatment plant, which we'll be taking up on December 2nd. And lastly, as Laurie was talking about, there are milestones for the upgrade of the treatment plant to secondary treatment. And along those lines, just an update, on the 15th of this month, Orange County and EPA came to an agreement to move towards their upgrade to secondary treatment by 2012. And we've also are aware that Morro Bay is now considering upgrade to secondary. Regarding the effluent limits at Section B, in 1996, the reasonable potential analysis was performed for the district, and it was based on federal guidance. That analysis determined there were no reasonable potential for 47 of the 78 toxic pollutants included in the ocean plan at that time. EPA requires a renewal of that reasonable potential consideration at least once in a permit cycle or once every 5 years. On November 5th, the district submitted a reasonable potential analysis, and they used a methodology that was included in a draft amendment to the ocean plan. The results of their analysis recommended deleting all but three of the 83 current ocean plan toxics. State Board staff has since informed us that that methodology that was used by the district has been deleted from their consideration. They forwarded a new methodology for peer review to UC Berkeley, and once that process is completed, they intend to recirculate for public comment the new draft amendment, which shouldn't be before the State Board until at least February 2005. Just State Board also recommends that we continue to use the current 2001 Ocean Plan regarding this matter, which has no provisions for reasonable potential analysis. Staff can't support the district's proposed RPA or the results of that reasonable potential analysis at this time. Both state board staff and regional board staff found some significant problems with their implementation of that methodology, and those comments are discussed in supplemental sheet number 2 and the attachment to that, which includes the state board's comments. Again, the methodology employed by the district is not part of the ocean plan, and the current ocean plan doesn't have RPA provisions in it. Staff also considered the variability of constituents of municipal wastewater, as well as the contribution of industrial sources to the POTW. Regarding industrial sources, there are 62 industrial wastewater contributors to the district system, 11 of which are considered significant industrial users, and 10 of those are subject to federal standards. The district classifies these as serious hazards. These include metal finishing and semiconductor manufacturers and the University of California at Santa Barbara. 25 of those 62 contributors are classified as hazardous by the district, and those include groundwater remediation sites, photo processing facilities, laboratories, and oil refining. Another consideration by staff was the organic pollutants present in groundwater there from cleanup sites that are in the area, from the many sites that we have in the area. And these potentially threaten the POTW via infiltration in the groundwater. And the analysis conducted by the district would recommend the removal of some of those constituents that we know to be present. At Section D, the Collection System Management Plan provides a framework for the development, implementation, and documentation of the district's efforts to operate and maintain their system. It also allows for the district to incorporate the current practices that they found successful in operating that program, and also includes the flexibility for the district to apply the guidelines according to their own system's needs. The biosolids requirements at Section F were provided by EPA directly, and they are recommended for all POTW permits, and of course this is an EPA permit. The monitoring aspects of that language were included in the monitoring and reporting program for the draft permit, and EPA also provided some comments relevant to the district's comments. The draft permit was publicly noticed on October 5th, and we used various methodologies to do that. It was mailed to all the interested parties. It was published in the newspaper. It was published on our website. And it was also emailed to all known interested parties. Staff also met with the district on November 4th. The comments received from the district focused on these areas: wastewater collection system management plan, reasonable potential analysis, which we've talked about. They requested the correction of the dilution ratio, which was formerly we used 111:1, and they noted that the correct dilution ratio at 7.64 MGD is actually 122:1, and so those effluent limits were recalculated and provided to the board in supplemental sheet number 2. The district also requested a reduction of surf zone monitoring, which both regional board staff and EPA staff strongly opposed. And also, the district requested the removal of some proposed receiving water bacterial standards for beach waters. Detailed responses to all those comments were supplied in supplemental sheets number 1 and 2, and the changes are also illustrated in the underlying strikeout versions of the documents that were provided to the board. Next slide, please. To summarize, this is a 5-year MPDS permit with a comprehensive monitoring and reporting program, and again, it's a Clean Water Act 301H waiver as well. The proposed waste discharge requirements and MPDS permit are designed to protect the beneficial uses of ocean waters and to protect public and environmental health. And with the settlement agreement, we look to progress toward achieving full secondary treated effluent for discharges to the oceans and the Central Coast. With the postponement of item number 5, staff would like to propose a modification to provision number G2 of the proposed order. It currently reads up to the point where it begins its bold print, and if the board doesn't mind, I'd like to read it into the record. For the revision of provision number G2, the requirements of this order supersede requirements prescribed by Order Number 9621, adopted by the Regional Board on July 26, 1996. Order Number 9621 is hereby rescinded, And that is what the current provision currently reads as. The modification would be, except as follows. The rescission of Order Number 9621 will not take effect as to the tributary collection system entities, which are named as permittees under the permit, until the Regional Board has adopted new waste discharge requirements for the tributary systems. And with that recommendation, along with those in the staff report, as well as supplemental sheets 1 through 3, staff recommends the adoption of Order Number R3-2004-0129. If the board has any questions, we'd be happy to address those.
Any questions from the board member to Mr. Stanley at this time? Ms. Shellcross?
I don't have any.
Yeah, I had one question. On this new provision, the rescission of order, is 9621, is that the old NPDS?
Correct.
So is that all we need in there? Because it's my understanding the old NPDS permit expires after 5 years. And is that all we have to have in this permit to extend those particular sections?
Yeah, it's already on administrative extension because it's been longer than 5 years. And it's probably not a big deal because the board will be considering the WDRs in 2 weeks anyway.
Okay, thanks. That's all from me.
Any other board members?
Bruce Daniels, I have one question. Maybe staff could talk about these additional treatment that's been proposed as part of the, I guess, settlement and not part of the permit, the enhanced treatment, I think it's called.
Well, Mr. Daniels, I haven't seen the proposed design for the extended treatment.
Well, Mr. Daniels, this is Roger Briggs.
Yes.
Your question is the enhanced treatment provisions in the settlement agreement?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, the way that's designed to work is the suspended solids limit, for example, for the 301H waiver was it 67 milligrams per liter, 63 milligrams per liter. I'm getting help from the audience.
And I can't quite hear you, Mr. Briggs.
Thank you. And so as kind of a guarantee that I guess some to provide some level of confidence for the board and everyone else who's interested in this, that effluent quality will not deteriorate unacceptably during the course of this 10-year conversion schedule. If the effluent quality gets to a point where it's within 85% of that 63 milligrams per liter, then the district, according to the settlement agreement, would be required to apply enhanced treatment, most likely as far as current technology in the form of polymers for enhanced settling. It allows for other comparable technologies if there's something better at a similar cost. And so the district would be required to apply that technology basically to knock down the settleable solids. And does it apply to BOD too?
Yes.
It also applies to the BOD limit as well in a similar fashion. And and then there are additional provisions for retesting that during the summer months to say that kicks in September, and so they're required to provide that treatment. Then they're allowed to test it again the following summer to see if in fact it's still needed, and if they continue to fail that intermediate requirement, they would have to continue with the enhanced treatment. So it's really pretty similar to what the district proposed to do when they applied for the 301H a couple years ago. That was before the board, where they said at the time if they approached their and they were in danger of going over their permit limit, that they intended to use enhanced treatment in order to stay within their permit limit. So it's basically an extension of that concept, but at a lower, better quality effluent level. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
And also to clarify, the enhanced treatment requirements, like the milestones, aren't permit terms. They're provisions of the settlement agreement, and what the agreement requires is that if these triggers are reached, the district has to undertake these enhanced treatments. If they don't work, the district has to try something comparable, but the requirement is to undertake the treatment, not to achieve a particular result. The enhanced treatment requirements are also subject to stipulated penalties, but again, it's for undertaking the treatment.
What are those? This is Bruce Daniels again. What are those stipulated penalties?
$200 a day.
Thank you.
Any other questions by board members at this time? Does that conclude your presentation?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you very much. At this time, then, we will go to the witnesses called by the discharger, and the first one is Camille Azzori.
Take us just a minute to get the district slides going here.
While that's taking place, just for the board members that are not here present, what we're going to do after we hear all the testimony and before we go into board deliberations, I'm going to take a 5-minute break, and I will ask the room to be cleared, and then the board will go into closed session at that time. And then we'll come back into open session.
Estimate how much time we need total? Probably 10-minute closed session.
Approximately 10 to 15 minutes on the closed session.
I got it. I heard you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Good morning, Ms. Hashimoto. My name is Camille Azzori, and I'm the general manager of the Goleta Sanitary District. I have some copies for our presentation here for your consideration today. First and foremost, I would like to thank the board and EPA for the time that you've spent on our permit. I'd like to thank your staff for the thorough considerations of the issues with our permit and for their thorough response to our comments. And I think in particular I'd like to thank also your executive director, Mr. Briggs, and Ms. Oaken, your legal counsel, for the diligence and the resilience that they showed in developing the settlement agreement, which we are pleased to have presented to you. We agree with most of the provisions that Mr. Stanley has advised the board today. Undoubtedly, there are certain provisions that we're not completely in agreement with, but for the most part of it, we agree with most of the provisions, and as such, we do urge you, and we urge EPA to issue the proposed permit and the waste discharge requirement that you've been presented here today. However, we do have some minor requests that we would like you to take into consideration. These requests are really relative to two issues, the collection system provisions and the reasonable potential analysis. For the collection system provisions, we think and we fully concur with the idea and the concept of controlling overflows and spills. We have absolutely no dispute with the concept and the objective of making sure that there are no overflows, that there are no spills that are, after all, harmful to the environment. Our agency, I'd like to just take a few seconds to indicate that we've been very proactive in that. We have had a sewer system management program for many years. It actually predates the federal concept of the CMOM program, which has been put on the side, but it really predates many of the provisions that we have here. And if you look at our performance, you would see that we pay a lot of attention for the collection system. In fact, EPA did audit our agency and did not come up with any issues. But we think those collection system provisions include other jurisdictions. And I'll get into that in just a second. But we are proposing that perhaps you can put a hold on these. We are suggesting that you put a hold on these collection system provisions for about 90 days to allow for some sort of an outreach effort with the stakeholders. Now, the stakeholders are not only the other agency in your region. Stakeholders include other jurisdictions, other agencies that are regulatory in nature, such as the health department, the building department, the planning department, the road department. Some of the provisions that are in our permit, as much as they are requesting us to give you a description of a plan in order to make this plan really effective to meet the objective that you're seeking, there are some jurisdictional barriers that will not allow us to get there. So we think that a meeting of the stakeholders would provide you with the ability to have more practical provisions. For example, if we have to address private spills on private property, if we have to enter private property, we are getting into the jurisdiction of the local health department. If we have to access storm drains, we're getting into the jurisdiction of the city or the county that has responsibility for the storm drains. If we have to access creeks, we got to get involved with fish and game. And I know that there are some barriers there. It's not that we don't want to do this. It's really important to do it, but to really do it right, we have to clear the way. And I think we all need to know what are the barriers that these other jurisdictions have. So our suggestion is to have a little bit of a time that allows for the stakeholders to get together with your staff and take the provisions that are proposed here and make sure that they are practical and they can be really applicable to the agencies. Part of the discussion is to have some kind of a protection in some sense against unwarranted lawsuits. We think that to have a permit that could be a door opener for unwarranted lawsuits, and we're not really ducking any responsibility here, but there are suits that are frivolous, that are not warranted, is not really good public policy as far as we are concerned, because it tends to raise the expenditures that the agency is spending on issues that it could be provided. So part of this discussion with your staff is to look at ways that these can be controlled. I know that there are permits in other jurisdictions that do have these, what they call affirmative defense provisions, and I refer you to the Stich Sanitary District up in the Bay Area that has very elaborate provisions that are very protective of the environment. We also think that part of the discussion is to look at the equal protection. I think the idea here, albeit, is to make sure that our communities or the communities in your region are not really subject to more rigorous than needed, perhaps, provisions by just providing a little bit of a comparison of what's going on elsewhere. We think that looking at these things in conjunction with the state board's ongoing effort in the sewer system management plan issue or initiative, which we recognize is about maybe a year down the road. Since this issue is incomplete, we are requesting that you perhaps modify the permit reopener, the language of the permit reopener, simply to allow us to bring back to you stakeholders' input and state board proposed program considerations that can all be blended to give us a real practical provision for the collection system. We agree with what you want to do. We've been doing it. We endorse it. We support it. But we think we want to make it effective. That's going to make sense at the end of the day. And therefore, we respectfully ask you to take this consideration under advisement. The second issue is the reasonable potential analysis. We have done our reasonable potential analysis in accordance with a methodology that was initially proposed to be adopted by the Ocean Plan this coming year. The intent was to just maybe save some time, save some money, and see if the proposed methodology, once you have the results of this proposed methodology, we felt perhaps we can be ahead of the game, so to speak. We do have a strong industrial waste control program. We were rated second in the nation on this program that controls the toxics. And so all we're looking at is to see how reasonable are the potential, is the potential to have toxics in our effluent. And we found that the potential is rather limited to about three constituents. So what we're proposing is perhaps you might want to consider continuing this review of the RPA in light of the fact that the State Board is really looking down the road and as early as February of 2005. And actually, the State Board staff did make this recommendation in their letter to your staff in which that perhaps the RPA issue can be looked at maybe after the State Board acts on the amendment and in light of whatever methodology will be applied at that point. It's okay to for us to continue with Table B, but I think at some point, if there are changes in the Ocean Plan that change that and put more emphasis on the reasonable potential, we would like your consideration there. And therefore, we request that, again, the same issue is to have a reopener to look at a revised RPA analysis at some point down the road. These are our only two requests that we have of you. And we certainly, again, once again, I would like to thank all your effort and your staff's effort in looking at our permit. And we look forward to working with your staff in implementing this program. Thank you.
Any question by the board members? Mr. Azzori? Thank you, sir. At
I'll let staff discuss the sanitary sewer overflow issue before I make any comments on that. But on the reasonable potential analysis issue, there's already a reopener in the permit as it's currently drafted that would allow the regional board to reconsider that issue. And actually, because it's an EPA-issued permit, it would have to be EPA that reopened the permit to do an RPA once the Ocean Plan is completed. But that's on page 22 of the waste discharge requirements. Paragraph 10 says that the permit can be reopened and modified to the extent allowed under the federal NPDES regs, which do allow for a permit reopener if new information becomes available or if regulations change. So if there was an RPA and there was a new Ocean Plan amendment, that's considered a new regulation, there would be two bases for reopening the permit. It's discretionary on the part of the regional board or EPA whether to do that, but no language changes are necessary.
Okay. According to my list that I gave you at the beginning, the next part would be cross-examination by board discharger's witnesses and cross-examination by the discharger of the regional board and EPA witnesses. Do we have any of those? Seeing none, the next would be comments by representatives of agency and Rebecca Bork, representing the Sanitation Agency Managers Association of Santa Barbara County.
Good morning, Regional Board members. My name is Rebecca Bjork. I'm here speaking today on behalf of SAMA, which is the Sanitation Agency Managers Association of Santa Barbara County. SAMA represents all of the treatment plant and collection system operators in Santa Barbara County. It's a organization that comes together to assist each other in meeting rules and understanding rules and in jointly solving operational problems within our districts. I'm speaking today on behalf of Martin Damwick, the president of SAMA, and I'd like to read a letter from him. The subject is regulatory framework for collection system operation and management and PDS permit provisions. And it's addressed to Mr. Jeffrey Young, the chair. Dear Mr. Young, the Sanitation Agency Managers Association of Santa Barbara County, SAMA, includes members from all of the wastewater treatment plants and wastewater collection systems in Santa Barbara County. Managers and staff members from wastewater agencies in San Luis Obispo and Ventura counties also participate and contribute to SAMA on a regular basis. It has come to our attention through recent NPDES permit renewal actions that the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, RWQCB, has elected to implement a comprehensive regulatory program for collection system management. Extensive requirements for collection system evaluation, maintenance, and operation have been incorporated into individual discharger permits. SAMA and its membership support the regional board goals of promoting proactive collection system management and of limiting water quality degradation associated with sanitary sewer overflows to the maximum extent possible. However, SAMA members are concerned that the permits being issued were developed without any outreach to the permitted community. Not only was there no opportunity for input provided to the permittees, we were not even given a heads up that the regulatory program was forthcoming. The first notice that collection system operators received about the new requirements for collection system management was the receipt of draft permits in the mail, sometimes so close to the date of adoption as to not even provide the required 30-day comment period. SAMA members are understandably concerned that the RWQCB staff would undertake such a new and comprehensive program, which has the potential serious short and long-term budget implications, without first notifying collection system operators and or providing a public process to receive meaningful information during the development process. In other regions where collection system management programs have been developed, RWQCB staffs have first conducted significant outreach programs to inform the collection system operators of concerns and gather information about the best way to regulate collection systems. Of significant concern to SAMA members is the disparity in permit requirements for operators of satellite collection systems as compared to NPDES permit holders. Collection system operators who operate a treatment plant are issued NPDES permits, while those operating only a collection system are issued WDRs. Because NPDES permits are instruments of the Clean Water Act, they carry with them a citizen suit provision that puts operators with these permits at risk. While all of us would like to eliminate SSOs entirely, we know that reducing their frequency and volume is a more realistic goal. The prohibition on sewer overflows contained in all permits being issued puts NPDES-regulated agencies at risk of having to divert funds that are dedicated to critical infrastructure improvements to defending lawsuits for SSOs that cannot realistically be prevented. Environmental groups such as Channel Keeper have stated that NPDES permits rather than WDRs should be issued to satellite collection system operators so that third parties can sue to enforce the collection system permit provisions. This in and of itself should be of concern to the RWQCB, as it is your responsibility to enforce permit provisions. Since the right for third-party suits for discharges to waters of the U.S. is always protected by the Clean Water Act, it can only be inferred that Channel Keeper does not trust the RWQCB to enforce the administrative requirements of the permit. SAMA urges the regional board to direct staff to initiate an outreach process to work with the stakeholders and develop a general WDR applicable to all collection system operators in the Central Coast region that will implement consistent and responsible programs to ensure collection systems are being adequately operated and maintained, and that will result in all collection system operators in the area being regulated in a consistent manner. We look forward to working with RWQCB staff to address some of the concerns SAMA has with the overly burdensome and prescriptive requirements in the permit and working to develop general WDRs for collection systems that will promote proactive maintenance and operation of collection systems. I would be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much. I did let you go over the 3 minutes because I wanted you to read that letter into the record. Are there any questions by the board members? Hearing none, then I'll go on to
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Briggs. Did I miss something?
No, you didn't. I did. And I wonder if I could go back a step with your indulgence to a question for the district, for Mr. Azzori. It is actually somewhat prompted by the last comments as well, but consistent with your comments and as far as your request for some reopener and provision for outreach and that sort of thing. I understand the sentiment, and certainly in hindsight, we could have done things differently. Although we have been treating everyone equally as their permits come up for renewal, as we've discussed in meetings, for example, with Monterey Regional System, the Watsonville System, the Santa Cruz County System, the Santa Cruz City System. So this is not really new, but I can appreciate how it may appear to be new from your perspective. However, now is the time for the board's consideration of this permit, and I think it would be wise to consider the possibility that the board may not have leeway as far as certain reopeners that you've requested, and any outreach would be after the fact as far as board consideration of this permit. So I think it would be wise to see if there are specific provisions, say in the collection system section of the permit, that you're still interested in having the board change, because you've talked generally. We do have specifics in our supplemental sheet with your specific comments on the permit and our specific responses, and so you know what our recommendations are as far as those specifics. But anyway, I think it would be wise to say if there are any particular provisions that you disagree with still in light of our staff responses.
Well, I think there are some provisions that we would like to see changed. They are in our letter, and but I think more importantly, Mr. Briggs, is that there are some missing parties to this whole program that are not here, that have never even been involved in the process. And I go to the issue of trying to make a meaningful program for private spills, for example. Our jurisdictions, our agencies do not have any jurisdictions on private property. And if we are to develop a program jointly with the health department to make it meaningful, the health department needs to be part of this program. The health department in our area has indicated that all they do is tell the user to shut off the water. And nobody takes care of the cleanup. Nobody takes care of where the spill ends up traveling. And our suggestion is that if you wish us to go in and have a meaningful program, aside from saying our jurisdiction ends here, then the stakeholders need to be brought into the picture. We are not concerned. I mean, I think that it would have been maybe more prudent to have everybody around the table to talk about it, but that's really behind us. I mean, it's already happened. All I'm looking for is if there is going to be something meaningful to effectively make a difference in the program, aside from giving you written documents that say, you know, our jurisdiction stops here, there are some other stakeholders that are not in it. You know, we can't get into a creek, for example. Let's assume a spill gets into a creek, and if we are to go there and clean it up, we won't be able to do it. Fish and Game will not allow us in our area to get in just, you know, haphazardly into a creek and then do whatever we want to do. So what we're suggesting is that these jurisdictions need to be in advance establishing allowances for whoever is going to be responsible to take care of chasing a spill, cleaning up a spill, to be able to effectively do it. And that is where we're going. What you've given us is something we can comply with today. We will send you back our program, and it's going to stop at a point where we say we really don't have a jurisdiction in this area, or Fish and Game won't allow us to do this in that area, or the building department will not allow us to enforce our standards. We have a live example in our agency where cities or county with jurisdiction over private construction of laterals will ignore our standards. And so if we're going to go inspect them, we do not have that allowance to do that. Now, this is the concept that I'm looking for, rather than to respond in a program that ends up, you know, essentially saying, this is what we do, this is what we don't do, and then I don't think that's what you want. Your ultimate goal is to make it a good program that's going to have some benefit, because we agree with your goal.
Well,
our suggestion is to bring those other people into it, so the health department is aware of what we need to do, so that the fish and game, the flood control districts, other jurisdictions that we have to access. Sanitary sewers spread over the neighborhood. They go over miles and miles of distances. They are on public right-of-way. They cross creeks. They cross bridges. They encumber private property. So they are, by nature of them being a network of pipes going in a neighborhood, they are invading other jurisdiction to the extent that we need to address what happens in those jurisdictions. They need to give us permission to do it, to make a meaningful program. So we're not really trying to delay this. We're not really trying to avoid doing it. Not at all. I think we subscribe to it, but we just want to make it a little bit more practical and doable.
Well, I think we're in complete agreement there. I don't think there's anything in the draft permit that precludes doing what you're suggesting doing. It makes sense to coordinate with other agencies, and I don't think that's any different than the setup that we have right now. If there's a spill, if it's something that you're responsible for and you feel that there's some permitting that's required in order to get access or some permission that's required, you have to seek that out. That's the way it is now. And I don't see that being any different. It makes sense, as you say, to discuss with all those various agencies that might be involved and coordinate ahead of time so that hopefully that could go quickly and smoothly in the event of the need for that. I think that all makes sense, but I don't know that there's, and it sounds to me like you're saying the same thing. There's nothing in here that you specifically disagree with as far as your ability to come up with a management plan and to incorporate that kind of an effort, and so there's nothing in here that precludes that from happening.
We will respond to what you want in this management plan, what I'm saying, but I don't think it's going to be the effective management plan that you're really looking for, because it's stopping us at barriers we cannot do.
Is there anything?
And that's the only suggestion we have is, let's all get familiar with what the other jurisdictions are looking for, so we can make provisions that are practical rather than end up being, I mean, please excuse my expression, you don't want this to be just simply a paperwork. You want this thing to really be effective.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think we want it too.
Right. And I think it's a great idea to be proactive with the other agencies that could be involved, and certainly if we could assist.
I think it mandates, it requires your staff to be there, and I think it's going to require perhaps certain changes to some of these provisions, because based on what we find out from those other jurisdictions. You know, there is a real issue with private accessibility. A statement is made in the report that once a spill reaches the public right of way, the local jurisdiction, the local agency is responsible for cleanup. Well, I can tell you, there isn't any local agency that has any responsibility for cleanup right now if a private spill goes onto the road.
That's not a part of the permit.
It is referred to in the discussion, and then a part of the recommendation is to describe what we can do within our jurisdiction. We'll be glad to do that. All
right.
I'm suggesting is to expand the program into a more meaningful program. You probably would want to solicit the input of those other jurisdictions.
Right, and we made a specific recommended change to make it clear that we're not requiring you to go on private property. That's understood.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the board members, Mr. Shellcross?
No, none.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll go on to comments by the public. Marco Gonzalez, the attorney for Heal the Ocean.
While he's walking up here, I realized that I didn't read the two letters from Heal the Ocean. I can do that, or Mr. Gonzalez, I can let you address those if you'd prefer.
Honorable members of the board, staff, public, Ms. Hashimoto, my name is Marco Gonzalez. On behalf of Heal the Ocean, I'm with Coast Law Group out of Encinitas, California. My specialty is Clean Water Act enforcement, regulatory compliance. Actually, Ms. Okun, I would not mind addressing them, but I feel constrained by the three-minute limitation. I don't know that I'll have enough time to get into it. If the board would indulge me to perhaps go slightly beyond that, I think I could address that in addition to my responses to...
Sure, I'll let you do that since we have three board members that are not here and give you a little bit additional time.
Thank you very much. As I believe you are all aware, Heal the Ocean has a long-standing interest in the issuance and or denial of issuance of 301H waiver to Goleta Sanitary District. Having been involved in the process which resulted in the denial of the permit originally, I feel compelled to, for the record, make some statements just in the event that this does go up on appeal. At this time, Heal the Ocean does not have an intent to bring an appeal to the issuance of this waiver, but should this be appealed by a third party or the district itself, I would just like to note for the record that there have been no change in circumstances to warrant new findings. Therefore, the justifications for prior denial are still relevant and applicable. Should GSD contest elements of the permit, Heal the Ocean may intervene in the existing litigation and defend the prior denial of 301H or this process as necessary. We very much support and applaud the regional board in responding to the comments of GSD. We think that you guys hit the nail on the head. Let me first address the settlement agreement and the letters, and then speak to some of the issues raised by Mr. Azzurri and also by SAMA. First of all, Heal the Ocean supports the terms of the settlement agreement. We thank you very much for incorporating our comments regarding milestones. We were very frustrated by this process. GSD clearly did not want Heal the Ocean at the table, and I think that was a bad idea on their part. The settlement agreement, while it contains most of what we would have liked to see in it, obviously there were some things that we needed. In particular, we wanted to have notice. We want to know what's going on as it's happening. We don't want to have to submit Public Records Act requests. We don't want to have to, in essence, fight for that information. As a result, both the Regional Board and Goleta Sanitary District have agreed that pursuant to the provisions for notice under the settlement agreement, Heal the Ocean will be included on that list of recipients of notice. That being said, to the extent that we have comments, we will try to get them to you diligently as the process moves on. But we do look forward to helping this process along. We think in the past, Heal the Ocean has repeatedly been seen as a hindrance to completion of the project. But I think at this point, if people would take a step back and realize that we now have a framework for achieving a much better result, I think we can create some collaboration that will benefit at least on the PR standpoint and most likely on the environmental standpoint as well. So that being said, we do support the terms of the settlement agreement. We don't intend to challenge it. But in 5 years, the door is open. Just as you cannot commit in 5 years to something that you don't know the foundation for, we similarly don't know where we're going to be in 5 years. The state of the monitoring program will have a lot to do with that. Statewide, we're seeing monitoring programs evolve. The current compliance-based, grid-based monitoring is not proven sufficient to answer the truly relevant questions on environmental impact. In particular, the work that we're doing with the City of San Diego on real-time observation systems, determining fate and transport of plumes, and calibrating models that give us a better indication and a real-time basis what those discharge pollutants are doing, that's the wave of the future. And I think in the next 5 years, we'll see implementation of that up and down the coast, and it could have an effect on the resolution of data that we get from the current discharges from Goleta San. That being said, I would like to move on to a response to some of the things that were brought up by Mr. Azzurri and also by SAMA, in particular with regard to the collection system. One of the things that I do in my practice is I sue sewering agencies for SSOs. And one of the things that it sounded like GSD doesn't like, they wouldn't come out and say it, but they did in their comments, is this strict liability prohibition on the discharge of untreated sewage. Sorry, guys, you can't get around it. The Clean Water Act does mandate an effluent limitation for SSOs, and that is zero. There is strict liability for even one, but as you correctly note in your response to comments, you have the discretion to take into account a number of factors when you consider your enforcement action to be taken. One word that Mr. Azzurri mentioned that really gets to me, it's that word frivolous. In 30 actions, I've yet to be called by the court frivolous. I don't know of many environmental groups who settle cases or even who win cases who are called frivolous. It's very unlikely that we lose these cases because, as Mr. Zuri mentioned, discharges happen. You know, in the comments, they note, you can't get to zero, and believe it or not, we recognize that. I also represent Channel Keeper on occasion, was mentioned by SEMA, and I can't say what they're addressing, this notion of do you have a WDR or an MPDES permit, I think it's a very relevant discussion, and I think it's incumbent upon you to look statewide, to look at the practices of other regional boards. It makes sense to incorporate the entire collection system into the MPDES permit for the POTW. In San Diego, we found very effective where dischargers have tried repeatedly to convince the board that they're not liable for upstream discharges if they don't make it either to public water or if they don't make it to the Pacific Ocean. They've tried to say that because it was covered by a WDR, they should not be held liable. The courts down there have specifically found that the WDR can be considered an effluent limitation under the Clean Water Act, and therefore claims under the citizen supervision can hold for the WDRs as well as the NPDES permits. So that being said, I would say I understand GSD's concern with the collection system, but I think that your staff has done a good job responding to it, and I agree with Mr. Briggs' response that there are built into the system certain abilities for flexibility in enforcement. We, as third-party enforcers, we can't just run out and sue for every spill that happens. Actually, we can't sue for any past spills. We have to show a continuing pattern of violation. And if they have a sewer system overflow response plan that is deemed adequate and valid, we're going to have a tough time getting into court and getting penalties or even substantial injunctive relief if their program really is as good as they claim for it to be. I will conclude with one issue that is a reasonable potential analysis. I think, once again, your staff did a great job of responding to them. While it may have made sense at the time for GSD in their mind to try to be proactive on what they saw as amendments coming down the pipe, from what we hear from the regional, from the state board, we're not sure what February approvals will be. We're not sure what, after the peer review, what reasonable potential analysis they will accept. And as you had mentioned, it really is an EPA decision. I think if upon reopening, as you noted, is feasible under the permit, the existing RPA is going to be considered, I think GSD should take into account the comments that you made regarding the assumptions and really the difficulty in reviewing that submittal. I had my experts look at it in the very short time that I had it in my possession, and we can't make heads or tails of it. If a new RPA is going to be submitted or if that one is going to be resubmitted, we suggest that they put a little more work into justification of the assumptions and really provide a clear path so that our reviewers can follow. And, you know, believe it or not, we support eliminating monitoring requirements if they don't serve a purpose other than costing the district money. And we will be more than happy to sit down with the district, review that with them as they get those done, and come to you and tell you that we agree with them on those ones that make sense. So we're not just up here trying to cost them money. We're very happy to see this process come to an end, and I hope that we can all agree to move forward from here. Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. Any questions of Mr. Gonzalez by any of the board members?
This is Bruce Daniels. Are we going to hear the letters, or is it now deemed that they've been covered essentially?
I can either read them or I can brief. Well, I'll just read them. They're only two paragraphs. Mr. Gonzalez wrote a letter dated November 11th to Mr. Battles, counsel for the district, and to me, which states, on behalf of Heal the Ocean, thank you for the opportunity to review the settlement agreement executed by and between the Goleta Sanitary District and California Regional Water Quality Control Board Central Coast Region. A true and correct copy of the final signed agreement shall be attached to this letter. Pursuant to Section F7 of the settlement agreement, certain notices shall be provided by facsimile and first-class mail to numerous representatives of GSD in the state of California. By this letter, GSD and the RWQCB hereby agree to provide Heal the Ocean by facsimile or first-class mail copies of any and all notices provided pursuant to Section F7 of the settlement agreement. Notice shall be provided as follows, and there's an address. Heal the Ocean hereby agrees to support the terms of the settlement agreement, issuance of the Clean Water Act Section 301H waiver, and approval of GSD's NPDES waste discharge requirements at the hearing scheduled for November 19th, 2004. And it's signed by Marco Gonzalez, and then there's signature lines for the attorneys for the district and the regional board, as well as for Hillary Hauser of Heal the Ocean and the district and the regional board. That agreement was never signed. The sanitary district wrote a letter backdated November 16th, which is signed by John S. Carter, President Pro Tem of the district. Dear Mr. Gonzalez, we are writing in response to your proposed letter agreement dated November 11th, 2004, addressed to Richard Battles, attorney for the Goleta Sanitary District, and Lori Oken, attorney for the Regional Water Quality Control Board, Central Coast Region. This letter will confirm the district's agreement to send your client, Heal the Ocean, all notices sent to or received from the RWQCB pursuant to Section F7 of the settlement agreement between the district and the RWQCB. These notices will be sent by facsimile and first-class mail to Heal the Ocean, and the address follows. The district appreciates your offer on behalf of Heal the Ocean to support the terms of the settlement agreement and the renewal of the district's 301H permit at the hearing scheduled for November 19, 2004. Although the district understands that Heal the Ocean is not obligated to do so, the district would nevertheless appreciate Heal the Ocean's support at the November 19th hearing on this matter. And Roger Briggs also sent a similar letter to Heal the Ocean stating that the regional board would provide notices pursuant to Section F7 that we send to the district. We'll copy those to Heal the Ocean.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions, Bobby? Any other questions by board members?
None here.
No.
Was there another question?
No.
Okay. Thank you. At this time, is there anyone else in the public wish to address the board on this issue? I don't have any other cards. Seeing none, I'll go on to the last item, which is summation or closing statements by the discharger. Yes.
We were just whispering to each other here. Logistically speaking, I think it would make more sense if we had both closing statements after we had the break.
After we had the break?
Yeah.
Can you hold it that long?
I can hold, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And the board will adjourn into closed session during the break, so we'll have to clear this room. The closed session is, as noticed in the separate closed session item, to discuss the litigation. We also noticed that the board may deliberate on this item in closed session under another provision of the Open Meeting Act, but I don't expect that the board will be doing that. And if they decide to do that, obviously we'll do that after the hearing is closed.
Thank you, Ms. Holcomb. So with that, we'll take a five-minute break, and then we're going to come back in a closed session, which will last 10 to 15 minutes. And then we'll start the open hearing again.
Hey, Ross. Russ?
Yes. Les?
We're supposed to stay on the line, right?
Yes, you stay right there. You're going to be part of the closed session.
Well, you can take that,
but I was concerned you can about
take a five-minute break. Business.
Okay. Russ, I'm going to run downstairs and get lunch and come right back.
Okay. We'll take a roll before we start in the closed session, guys.
Right. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
For us, it'll be how you doing? Fine, thank you. It's for public comment.
Okay.
I mean, public forum. Yeah. We have the calendar on the agenda too.
Yes.
Are we rolling there? Okay.
Ms. Holcomb, are you ready?
Apparently not.
We're waiting for our board attorney to come back. Okay.
Gerhardt? Can you put the mic down just a little bit more? It sounds like a little fainter now. Does that go down any further? Okay. Thanks.
Lori? Okay, we're back into open session. I'll announce that the board did not make any decisions or deliberations in the closed session. And we will go back to the summation and closing statements, and I'll ask the district to make their final statements.
Before they do that, let me just respond to the district's request for a reopener regarding the sanitary sewer overflow provisions, either for the 90-day review, which staff will address later, or if the state board adopts an order or another program for sanitary sewer overflows. The permit already does allow for a reopener to the extent allowable under the NPDS regs, so we couldn't provide for a broader reopener than that. The state board is considering, one of the things the state board is considering is issuing a statewide general NPDS permit for sanitary sewer collection systems. And there's a question on whether a current permittee would be able to enroll in that permit when they already have sanitary sewer overflow provisions in their current permit, because you can't have two NPDS permits regulating the same discharge at the same time. I don't know what the answer to that is, and it depends a lot on what the state board ends up doing with their program and when, but I have submitted a comment to the SSO committee that the state board has formed, requesting that in their action they consider how to treat existing NPDS permittees that have these requirements that want to enroll in whatever the state board program is. So I anticipate that that would be addressed by the state board action.
I have a question.
Mr. Daniels.
Mr. Daniels, mightn't that also apply for the new regulations opener that you talked about earlier?
The NPDS requirements do allow, or the NPDS regs allow for a reopener if there's new information or new regulations. So for the reasonable potential analysis, if the ocean plan is amended to provide a process for doing an RPA, EPA could reopen the permit to change the Table B effluent limitations based on an RPA, which would be new information, and the ocean plan, which would be a new regulation. The state board program, if they end up doing a general order, is a little bit different because it's not new information or new regulations. It's just a different permit covering the same discharge that might be an alternative permit. So it's not clear whether the district could enroll in that right away or would have to wait until their next permit cycle.
But mightn't this new permit have different terms or new terms or different? Something would probably be different.
Bruce, can you speak up a little bit?
I was saying, mightn't this state permit have new terms that would therefore qualify it as new regulation?
No, a permit isn't a regulation.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir, for waiting.
Thank you, Mr. President. In closing, we certainly, again, once again, want to thank all of you for the time you've spent on our permit, and we look forward to working with you and your staff on implementing our program. I do want to just repeat one request that we have, which is to perhaps in a different form, and that is to really have your staff be the leading lighthouse in getting the stakeholders together that goes beyond just the agencies, that gets other jurisdictions into the mix in order to make a more effective SSMP program in your region. The fact that it's consistent in the region does not mean that it's applicable in every part of the region, because there are different jurisdictions in the region that differ, health department, building departments, and stuff like that. And that's really the request we have for the reopener on the SSO's issues. With respect to the RPA question, I think Ms. Oaken has indicated that there is a reopener to the extent that it is within the guidelines of the NPDES laws, and we can use that reopener as long as it is within these requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Briggs, staff?
Start with Mr. Stanley.
Yes, Todd Stanley, Regional Board staff. Yes, I'd like to touch on just a few points that were brought up a little earlier by the district. There's no requirement in the permit that they take on responsibility for private sewer spills on private property, so there's nothing that mandates that they access private property to address that problem. There's also no requirement that they access creeks. The permit does not preclude the district from working with other jurisdictional agencies as appropriate, and staff is open to participating in that process. In fact, the program assumes that there will be that kind of interaction in the development of their plan. The State Board also has noted that it may be a couple of years before whatever permit they come down with comes into place for sanitary sewer overflow management plans, and they've endorsed the approach that we've taken. Section D3 of the permit provides flexibility for the implementation of the management plan elements as it's applicable to a discharger system, so it has built-in flexibility that applies universally to the implementation of those elements. And lastly, on the RPA, as I think we've all acknowledged that there's a reopener in the permit already, and it would be at EPA's discretion to open that and modify the permit based on the RPA only. Staff recommends no particular changes to the order, and recommends again the adoption of Order R3-2004-0129.
And just to clarify that, no further changes beyond beyond what are outlined in the supplemental sheets.
Correct.
Okay.
And in the staff presentation on the effective date.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We had the addition to the effective date.
Right, the revision of G2.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the board, one other response that I'd like to add is in terms of a closing statement is in response to the district's issue about, I think on their slide they called it equal protection, and I understood that to mean that requirements should be equal and consistent, and certainly that's our goal, and in fact that's why we've made these recommended amendments with regard to collection system in particular to be consistent with other permits that I listed earlier that we've been taking up over the last three years. And you know, normally when we talk about consistency, and if you use the term level playing field, kind of an overused phrase, we're usually more concerned about that as far as business competition, and that it's not fair for one business to be regulated more than another business if there's a competition issue and extra cost involved with that that tips the scales in an unfair way, and we certainly try to watch for that. However, this is not a matter of the district operating a publicly owned treatment works being in competition with anybody, and for that reason we felt it was appropriate just to take these as we see it improvements in protection from sewer system overflows, take those up as the permits come along in this fashion. And I don't think there's really an issue there in terms of an equal protection concern. And that's the only other comment I wanted to make. So I would reiterate that I recommend approval of these waste discharge requirements with the additions that we had on the slide. And with the additions that we've outlined in the supplemental sheets. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Does EPA have any final closing statements?
No, we don't.
Thank you. So at this time, I'll bring it back to the board members for discussion and possible motion. Mr. Daniels, do you want to start?
Yes, I'm very supportive of moving this forward and and getting this secondary treatment issue resolved, you know, for good. So I think it's very good. I think the reopener thing allows a lot of these things to be handled in the future that might change, and so I'm very supportive.
I agree. Daniel Press here. I want to echo moving forward.
Daniel, can you speak up a little bit, please?
Yeah, Daniel Press saying I echo Bruce Daniels' comments. It seems to me there's plenty of flexibility here to adjust as state board actions become clearer. So I think staff has done a tremendous job here, tremendous detail, and I would like to move forward.
Okay. Les?
I, too, am very much in favor of it. In the future, I think the comments brought up about looking at the system as a whole from discharge to from deposit to discharge, if you will, and including input from private landowners, other agencies that may have jurisdiction outside, that whole process is a great idea to work on in the future. I'm very much in favor of passing this.
Mr. Shellcross.
Yeah, this has been a long process, I know, and I just appreciate all the time that folks have put into this. On both sides, or all sides, I should say. In particular, staff, and in particular, Lori Oaken has, I know, put in an incredible amount of time and effort in this, and I'm just really appreciative of how this is turning out. And I'm ready to support this.
Thank you. My comments, I do want to thank everybody who was involved. I know it's a lot of time, a lot of compromising, and information back and forth. I wish this would have happened 10 or 11 years ago. I'm the only board member who was here and tried to push it at that particular time. But it's happening. I just wish that the time was shorter. I'm not really supportive of the 10 years. I thought probably 5 to 8 years would have been more appropriate, but I can live with it. If the district meets its deadlines, and I'm sure that they will, they've really stepped up to the plate. I want to thank them for doing that. And I want to thank everybody else that's been participated in this process. And we're very fortunate. I'm very supportive of the final decision.
Mr. Chair, I'd be willing to make a motion.
Mr. Daniels, be my guest.
I move that we adopt this permit with the changes in all of the supplemental sheets and the change to G2 mentioned by staff today.
I second it. Daniel Press.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any question to the motion? Ms. Hewitt, would you call the roll, please?
Les Bowker?
Aye.
Bruce Daniels?
Yes.
Daniel Press?
Aye.
Gary Shellcross?
Aye.
Russell Jeffries?
Aye. And thank everyone today for being here. Motion is carried.
Now we have one other thing on our agenda today, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk about you, Bruce.
Oh, but he's got to wait till he gets off the line.
We have a schedule to approve, don't we?
Yeah, the board meeting schedule. We'll go on to that, and then there's no executive office report. Is there, Mr. Briggs?
No, sir.
Okay. So the only other
maybe there is.
Might be a short one, but we'll go on to the item. We'll skip number 7 for right now. We'll go to item number 8, which is the board meeting schedule for 2005. Mr. Briggs.
Yes, this is a carryover from the October meeting. I made adjustments in the schedule consistent with the comments that I received during that meeting, and I emailed everybody and asked if you get back to me if there were any other conflicts, so and I heard no